യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദ്യകേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സുദുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ ക്രമാത് വിവരണസ്യ ച. So, we were dealing with the ninth sutra of Sadhanapada the last time, the last class, which concludes the discussion on the five kleshas. So, we have to keep in mind, Patanjali gives a list of five fundamental psychological obstacles in spiritual life. Whenever we start making an attempt to meditate, to think of the higher, the beyond, the transcendental, or to give a higher dimension to our thinking, our life, immediately you find some obstacles cropping up in the mind. These obstacles are called kleshas. In Patanjali system, of course, there are different types of obstacles which are also mentioned in the Samadhipada, which we discussed earlier. So these obstacles are called kleshas. So avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesha, pancha kleshaha. These are the five kleshas, five obstacles. The most fundamental, the root cause of all obstacles, all problems, is avidya or ignorance. Our understanding of what we are, our understanding of what life means, what is the meaning of life, what should be the goal of life, all these ideas are clouded by one fundamental ignorance. And that ignorance is rooted in the wrong conviction that we think we are this body alone. We are just this psychophysical mechanism. This is the fundamental cause of all problems. And this is rooted in the ignorance of what we really are. We are, in reality, an eternal, omnipresent, immanent, transcendental reality, which is called Purusha in Patanjali system, Atman or Brahman in Vedanta. But we completely forget this fact. And then we interpret ourselves just as a psychophysical mechanism. So the slightest problem in physical life is like pain, or in mental life, happiness or unhappiness can make us upset, can make us imbalanced. And this is the root cause. Because of this fundamental ignorance, we interpret ourselves as the psychophysical mechanism. It's called asmita or egoism. So avidya is the one which is the fundamental cause of all ignorance, all wrong associations. We can imagine our own practical life. Something happens in our life, it makes us unhappy, and we get completely stripped off our feet. We become terribly upset. Why? Because we interpret ourselves to be a psychological mechanism. We should always be happy. So unhappiness is an experience at the mental level. If you interpret yourself to be a mind and nothing beyond that, then the slightest unhappiness is enough to make us upset, completely lose our balance. So egoism is the second. And out of these two problems, the three other fundamental obstructions in spiritual life emerge. Raga, Dvesha and Abhinivesha. These are the three reactions of the mind towards experiences as a whole. whatever experiences we have, our reaction to those experiences could be either in the form of extreme attachment. When something pleasant happens, we become completely attached to an extent that we become completely enslaved spiritually and psychologically. We become enslaved. It's like spiritual slavery. Here, attachment always means a strong obsessive feeling that this is mine or I belong to that. It is not that attachment should not be interpreted as what it is normally understood in social or family life, like affection, love, sympathy. No, it's not what is meant. Here, raga is the Sanskrit word which may be frequently translated as just attachment. But here, attachment means a strong feeling of obsessive attachment. For example, money, wealth, and so on. That's what it means. Any kind of obsessive attachment that makes us spiritually a slave. That's what is meant by raga. When we like something, we go for it. And if we don't get it, we become completely lost. And its opposite reaction is dvesha, aversion, a hostile feeling towards things which make us unhappy. The third reaction is fear, something that we want to avoid. So the whole mental world in its volitional or emotional reactions can be classified under these three categories, raga, dvesha, and abhinivesha. These are the three kleshas which emerge from egoism. Egoism here means our wrong understanding, our wrong interpretation of what we really are. We interpret ourselves just as a physical, psychophysical mechanism. So, and that again is rooted in the fundamental ignorance. We do not know, we do not remember that we are a supreme spiritual entity that goes far beyond the psychophysical dimension. Now, in the ninth sutra of Sadhanapada, Patanjali is defining abhinivesha, the fifth klesha. That is, swarasovahi vidusho api tatharudho abhinivesha. So, this abhinivesha is a kind of fear rooted in the according to some commentators, and that is, there is a spiritual and psychological truth in that. All fears are rooted in the fundamental fear of death. That is the view of some commentators. For example, maranatrasa, that is the meaning here, means fear of death. It should not be understood just as fear of physical life coming to an end, but rather fear of loss. Now, here the subject is very, very important from practical standpoint. There's an interpretation according to Bhoja, Purvajanmasu Asakrit Marana Dukhan Vavajanya Vasana Sankha. The meaning is this. As you should remember, according to yoga system, life is not just one cycle, beginning with birth, going through life, and ending in death. According to yoga and Vedanta philosophy, life is a continuous flow. Death is only a transition point, a coma in our existence. We'll be reborn, we'll be born again. So, any kind of fear has got a background, because every kind of fear is rooted in a previous experience. That's so. Swami Vivekananda, in his commentaries, if you read, you find Vivekananda gives some interesting illustrations. See this chicken when being born, hens being born, they'll be afraid of bigger creatures, bigger birds coming and attacking them. of some of the small creatures which are mostly which live on water, the moment they are hatched, they move towards water. So who taught them that water is the natural habitat? Or some of the smaller creatures should be afraid of some other animals? Previous experience. Previous experience means experiences that we gathered in previous life. So all fear has got a background. The background not only in this life, but sometimes in previous life. So all these are some of the psychological problems. Another example is obsessive unhappiness. Sometimes you find. One grand example that many modern interpreters and so some of the old Patanjali commentators point out is this. A natural cynical tendency. If you show a glass in front of them, they will say, how half the glass is empty. Their eyes won't focus on the other half which is full. They will immediately declare, the glass is only half empty. So a kind of negative attitude, cynical attitude, seeing only the darker side of life, completely forgetting the brighter side of life. So these are some of the characteristics which can emerge in our mind the moment we start in our spiritual life. So there is a solution to this. We will come to that. In fact, today we are going to deal with Patanjali's famous solution that he puts forward for all these problems that we encounter in our spiritual life. Not only in spiritual life, but in our everyday life situation. Not only for a spiritual seeker. Patanjali's teachings are extremely relevant and psychologically very sound for us in our day-to-day practical life. So, this kind of fear, this kind of abhinivesha is the fifth characteristic problems that we have to encounter. So, one difference is the other two problems, raga and dvesha, attachment and aversion, may be it could be acquired only in the present birth. But there is one difference. Strong obsessive tendencies, negative tendencies, which sometimes stand in the way of our life, which create a mental block, a mental trap that we cannot get out of, are all due to some experiences we had in the past. One may ask the question, what's a way out? What's the way, what solution? And Patanjali gives a very interesting solution. He says, if you understand it, it's no more a problem. You find in our daily life, when we understand something about a problem, when we get an idea of what problems we may have to encounter, then the problems will not be such a serious problem. Problems become a real problem only when in total lack of awareness, we step on that problem. So we will deal with that problem. So he says, this abhinivesha or obsessive fear, obsessive tendencies, obsessive negative attitude. Sometimes it is called, psychologists will give names like, you know, they say a kind of inner psychological conspiracy against your own success. Your own mind always going after the darker side of life and things. So it's called, you know, an inner conspiracy. We want to achieve, but our mind always going and focusing on the darker, the undesirable aspects of real life. Never focusing on the positive aspects. Patanjali will speak about the need to focus on the positive aspects of life. That's what we are going to deal with in future. Now, so he says, swarasavahi means a kind of ever-flowing. These tendencies, samskaras, impressions are coming as a flow from innumerable previous lives, not in this life alone. So they have formed a kind of solid mass of tendencies and impressions, which we cannot get out of because our mind is rooted in that. People want to bring about a change in their life, but may not always succeed. You read a book, you listen to a great idea, and you sincerely want to open a new chapter in our life. But the moment you really start making an attempt, immediately there is a dead wall, a big obstacle. So Patanjali says, that's because of the innumerable samskaras, impressions and vasanas and tendencies that we have acquired in previous life. And he will explain a way out of this. In the 10th sutra that we have not dealt with so far, of the Sadhanapada, Patanjali gives a very, very famous solution to this problem. He says, Te prati prasavaheyaha sukshmaha. There's a sutra. The literal meaning of this sutra is, sukshma here means kleshas, subtle forms of tendencies, all these obstacles. How to eradicate them? How to eradicate negative tendencies, cynical tendencies, undesirable tendencies that we want to sincerely get rid of but cannot, because there is a conflict between mind and intellect. You read a book, you listen to a great idea, you talk to some holy persons, and you get fully convinced intellectually that you have to change, or you have to practice certain noble virtues, or you have to start a new tendency, a new set of activities which you know very well will be very helpful to you. You fully decide, determine. But the moment we start doing that, mind creates a block. There's a block between intellect and mind. Intellect is convinced of the need to do that and willing to do that, but we all live not at the intellectual level, but at the mental level. 95% of our activities, our life, everything takes place at the mental level, not at intellectual level. When we cannot mentally do what the intellect knows to be desirable, what the intellect wants to do, this is the conflict or the stumbling block. So spiritual practices are the methods to make the mind cooperate with what the intellect wants to do. So in the 10th sutra, Patanjali says, these kleshas, these obstacles can be completely eradicated through one process which he calls pratiprasava, means counter-evolution. Prasava means evolution going forward. For example, an animal giving birth to its cubs, its children, its small ones. Pratiprasava is not possible at the biological level. It is possible only at the mental, psychological, spiritual level. Pratiprasava means counter-evolution. The method is this. To be very simple, I can give one simple flashlight and then I will come to the subject. Suppose we face a problem, extreme hatred, raga, one of the kleshas we discussed, or dvesha, great aversion towards something, great obsessive liking for something which we really do not want, or irrational fear, obsessive fear, all this. Suppose we face any of these problems. How do we solve this problem? Suppose we think of the cause from which these problems emerge. We think how these problems emerge. We try to find out the cause. So we analyze the effect and go in search of the cause. From effect to cause is counter-evolution. From cause to effect is evolution. Evolution means manifestation from causal to effect form. That is evolution. Counter evolution means from effect to cause. Suppose we have to encounter any of these problems. Extreme aversion to a certain things, extreme fear, obsessive tendencies, which we know very well are not good for us, which we sincerely want to get rid of. But we cannot do that because there is a block, a conflict between intellect and mind. Now, one way out, according to Patanjali, is try to think of the reason, the cause behind this problem. What's the reason for it? Suppose we feel great hatred, aversion, a negative attitude towards somebody or something. If we calmly think, what's the reason for it? What's the explanation for it? When we try to get an explanation, then you feel that aversion is gone or it is weakened, it is reduced. Suppose we feel extremely attached to something, obsessive attachment, strong desire towards certain things which we really do not want, which we know to be very harmful to us. We want to get rid of them. But we cannot. So Patanjali says, counter-evolution. Think of the cause, the reason, the background, the explanation for this obsession. Either obsessive fear, obsessive hatred, or obsessive liking for things that we do not really want. Once we try to find out or think of the cause behind, once we try to get an explanation for these problems, you find the problems become reduced, manageable. This is the simplest explanation. I will come to the subject again in detail. So just think of how these problems originate. Then dissolve these problems into their cause mentally. When you analyze the effect, for example, aversion, extreme aversion towards certain things, then we think and analyze different reasons, background, explanations. Perhaps you may have quarreled with a person sometime in the past, maybe several years back. And that creates a kind of obsessive hatred or aversion towards that person, or maybe an incident, or maybe an event, whatever may be, depending upon the case. And then think of the background and explain. That's the reason why I feel an irrational fear, hatred towards certain things or certain persons. And once we make this analysis, once we get the solution is this finding of the cause, tracing from effect to cause, then the problem will be reduced. That's what Edgar Cayce did. Of course, I'm not a fan of Edgar Cayce, far from it. But if you read his books, you find sometimes he was a doctor or maybe kind of a doctor in American English, so to speak. Maybe not a real doctor. He was something of a doctor. Now, people came to him and they may have gone to different other professional doctors who could not find solution, could not diagnose his problem. So he said, well, you have done something maybe 3,000 years back. You were living in Egypt. You had done something. That's why you are suffering. Well, and then he gave some solutions. So that patient immediately thought, well, that's real. And mentally, the problem was, to some extent, in many cases, the problem was solved. I'm not logically justifying Edgar Cayce or his methods because he is not accepted by mainstream psychologists, not even by mainstream parapsychologists. But the method he employed was a tool that he may have got from Patanjali Yoga Sutra. Going for a cause, going for an explanation, going for a background check. And once you understand it, then the problem appears to be a lesser problem. But Patanjali uses this as a very grand scientific technique. He says, rationally you analyze what's the reason for this irrational fear, irrational hatred, or irrational liking, obsession, whatever it may be. And try to dissolve the effect into the cause through contemplation, through introspection. Because that will be very helpful in spiritual life. How it happens? There's an explanation in the yoga commentaries. According to yoga system, even instinct is not without a background. Instinct is instincts do not emerge in a vacuum. Instinct also has got a background in previous experience. Every instinct has got a rational explanation. It can be explained in the light of its cause, that is, previous experience. Now, suppose we analyze our own life, problems, thought currents, conflicting ideas that emerge in the mind. We know very well that these ideas may prompt us to do certain things. Because every idea, every vritti, every modification, every samskara that emerges in the mind make us go back to a previous, to some previous experience. And the mind travels backward in time. I explained in the last class. When we remember something, or when we become victims of strong tendencies, impressions, either raga, extreme obsession or attachment to certain things, or extreme aversion or fear, whatever may be. All these are obstacles that could emerge the moment we start spiritual life. So when they emerge, what really happens? Our mind travels backward. When we remember an incident that took place when we were 5 years old, if at all we could remember. Maybe 100-year-old person may remember something happened when he or she was 5 years old. When he or she remembers, the mind is traveling backward to the fifth year, 95 years moving backward in split second. How does it move backward? It moves backward through tendencies. Actions, not possible. A 95-year-old man lying down somewhere may remember something that happened to him when he was 5 years old, eating a chocolate or something. If he remembers that, if he has a strong desire to eat that kind of chocolate again, the moment that samskara, the vritti, the modification emerges in the mind, his mind travels backward all the way 95 years. And he reaches his fifth year. And his mind connects with that incident. The mind travels through a track. And that track is the track of samskaras and tendencies. All the way backward. Now, in spiritual life, it is not so harmless. Whenever tendencies and impressions re-emerge in the mind, they have a tendency to prompt us to act the same way. Every samskara can make us repeat the same action which actually created that samskara. That's an important point, remember. That's where the problem really starts. When we remember an incident from previous life, through samskaras and vrittis, we just do not just remember. When we remember, that samskara gets reinforced because that idea again re-emerges in the mind. So the samskara gets reinforced. And every reinforced samskara can become a vasana. Vasana means a strong tendency to act, repeat the same action if the action produced happy result. Or to avoid an action if that action produced unhappy result. Now, and if you repeat that action, again the same samskaras may get reinforced. So, what is happening, pratiprasavaka in counter-evolution is, we block the emergence of an identical action. Thoughts may emerge in your mind. Immediately you try to get background information. You just think of how those thoughts emerge in your mind. Go to the cause of those thought currents. And then at the psychological level, you can neutralize those samskaras, unnecessary, undesirable samskaras. So that's how to do. For example, when we try to meditate, but certain thought currents may emerge, which could be very bad, which may be harmful, negative, not helpful. But if we sit quiet and think of the background, the previous, the cause, and then, oh, that's a cause. In the moment we focus on the cause of these samskaras, the unnecessary thought currents, that moment the samskaras get weakened. We don't act. We may act if we do not think of the cause. So effect should be dissolving cause. That's the meaning of pratiprasava. Anyone can practice in our everyday life. In our everyday life, whenever unnecessary, negative, harmful thought currents and conflicts emerge in the mind, and we find those thought currents sometimes hamper our everyday life, may create conflicts in our relationship with people around, may create conflicts in our professional life, in the office context and domestic life, and so on. The moment we try to think of the background, the cause, for the possible causes of those thought currents which create problems, then we may not act. Thought currents will emerge in the mind, but these thought currents will not culminate in action. If we do not neutralize them through this pratiprasava technique, it can lead us to action. So negative thought currents and impressions can be blocked before they fructify, before they become really actions, because before they reach, lead us to action. And action can be harmful. When hatred comes, aversion comes, suddenly we become aware of this hatred and aversion towards things, persons, events, and so on. Try to think of the background, how they originate, how they emerge, what could be the causes. And then try to get an explanation. Once you explain the effect in the light of the cause, then the effect is gone. You are focusing on the cause, and then the effect cannot, these unnecessary thought currents cannot lead to action. So they can be stopped in their track. This is the technique of pratiprasava. So how do we do in the light of Patanjali Yoga Sutra? The idea is this. We must remember all conflicting thought currents, raga, dvesha, abhinivesha, attachment, aversion, fear, all these are rooted in one fundamental cause. We interpret ourselves as this psychophysical mechanism. In other words, ego. Ego is a big granite stone wall that stands in front of us. That's why when the commentators give an explanation of solution to this problem, they say Kriya Yoga is the method of this Pratiprasava technique. I mean, finding an explanation for the negative tendencies and impressions that emerge in the mind. How do we do that? Kriya Yoga means Tapaswadhyaya Ishara Pridhanani Kriya Yoga. This is the first sutra of Sadhana Pada. Please remember, if we go to the second chapter, Sadhana Pada, you find the first sutra is a definition of Kriya Yoga. That is Tapaswadhyaya Ishara Pridhanani Kriya Yoga. Tapa means practice of vows, some strong moral disciplines, etc. Swadhyaya means reading good books with good ideas. Books that feed the mind with spiritually helpful, spiritually positive ideas and thought currents. But the most important thing for a spiritual seeker, Isvara Pradhana, means a kind of resignation and surrender to God and God's will. When we talk about God and aware of this fact, God has got a bad name these days. God, according to Patanjali Yoga Sutra, is the God of the whole creation. God who lives in the hearts of all of us. God who is omnipresent in transcendental reality. God which, and if we meditate on that God idea, it makes us like gods. We don't become gods, of course. We become angels, at least. When we meditate on these spiritual ideas, we also slowly manifest our own inherent divine qualities, divine characteristics. We become more compassionate. We love everyone. We have sympathy for the whole creation. We cannot hate anything in this world, even a fly or an ant or a plant or a tree, if we worship God. Because Vedantic and yogic concept of God is a God that is present everywhere, immanent in everything. That's the idea behind. Now, if one can surrender oneself to this supreme reality, then what happens? Then that supreme reality as a divine power enters our mind. Our mind gets linked to that all-pervading divine reality, and we become instruments in the hands of that omnipresent, immanent divine reality. Then we slowly become divine. Our actions, our words, our life become spiritual. Becomes God-oriented, spirituality-oriented, becomes spiritualized. Now, this is possible through prayer. This is possible through readings of holy books, discussion of holy books. But one important characteristic, one important prerequisite is this strong granite wall of ego should come down. Very often people pray, but it doesn't work. That's because the ego system stands erect and strong and powerful. So prayer becomes just a ritual, a mechanical ritual. The moment we open our hearts completely to this divine reality, then according to Vyasa, he says, all these kleshas become weakened. They become neutralized. So Vyasa says, Sa Kriya Yogaha Kleshamscha Pradhanu Karoti, means this Kriya Yoga, which includes Ishvara Pranidhanam and prayer, all these practices, they completely weaken these kleshas, spiritual obstacles. Spiritual obstacles get completely weakened or neutralized through the practice of Kriya Yoga. That is the important technique which is recommended here. Practice of Kriya Yoga is the first technique in destroying kleshas. Kleshas are due to accumulated tendencies and impressions in the mind. Some of them may not be very good, some of them may be very harmful. So there are all kinds of tendencies in the mind, in our chitta. So, if we go on enriching, increasing the positive tendencies, positive impressions, through the practice of tapa and swadhyaya and Ishvara Pranidhana, then slowly what happens, our mind gets more and more spiritualized, mind gets more and more spiritual. And that is one problem. That's one solution to the big problem. As I said, you know, this is an unconscious conspiracy against our own success, cynicism, etc. Aversion, which is called abhinivesha and dvesha. The last two kleshas are very dangerous, and very frequently we become victims of these two problems. That is dvesha and abhinivesha. Dvesha means obsessive aversion to certain things. Abhinivesha means obsessive fear, hatred towards certain things, which can create stumbling blocks in spiritual life. So once we practice Kriya Yoga, we get out of this. Otherwise, Raga, Dvesha and Abhinivesha can create a mental trap. And whatever we may do, we feel that we are not making enough progress. This happens in practical spiritual life. But one solution that is recommended by the teachers of Yoga and Vedanta, both, is this. We sometimes try to prepare a roadmap all the way from beginning to end in spiritual life. Sometimes we want a complete, thorough roadmap, like GPS system. Before we start driving, we should know where exactly the car will reach. So we plan everything. So we go on asking questions. We try to philosophically analyze all possible obstacles, all steps. This is all right when you drive a car, but not in spiritual life. In spiritual life, as we make progress slowly, our own mind becomes more and more purified. Our mind changes, our mind evolves, our mind grows spiritually. And once you take the first step and get established in that, at that stage, you find mind will be able to take the next step. Sometimes this is a major problem in interaction I found in Sunday class interactions. Sometimes friends ask questions. They want a thorough, complete explanation of the whole process of spiritual life. So that reminds me of an incident long back. One of our very senior Swamis, the Ramakrishna Order. He used to give initiation long back. So disciples used to write letters to him. So he used to tell, you should take this mantra, you should pray, meditation. All these instructions were given. So, all right, I have done it. He'll write. Then finally he told, well, you try to meditate every day, at least twice, without failure, wherever you are, whatever you are doing, at least twice a day. After 1 week, he wrote back, that also I have done. Then he wrote back, all your life, keep in mind the idea of God in your mind, whatever you are. After 1 week, he wrote back, that also I have done. Now the problem is, sometimes we delude ourselves into thinking that what we want to do, we have already done. That's a part of the mental trap. You know, mind plays very wonderful tricks. Mind is a great gymnast. Sometimes, mental trap. We want to do certain things sincerely, and at one stage, we delude ourselves into thinking that we have already done it. We focus on an idea, a goal, a concept, and then we delude ourselves into thinking that that concept is not a concept. It has become a reality in our real life, which is not a fact. An idea or a concept is not a reality. Experience is one thing, an idea or concept is another thing. So very often, we interpret spirituality as a mere concept, as an idea, as a doctrine. That's the problem number one. Spirituality is not a concept or a doctrine or an idea. It is life, real practice. And when we really practice, we find after some progress, our mind also gets equipped to guide us properly. If you walk, when you walk uphill in San Francisco streets, if you look from the bottom, you feel, oh, this is uphill road, very difficult to walk. But once you take 10 steps, then you find, you can very easily take 20 steps more. But if you do not take 10 steps, if you sit at the bottom of the hill and analyze the length of the road and the difficulties involved, then we will never make a progress. In spiritual life, as we practice from stage one, our mind also slowly evolves and grows and becomes mature enough, becomes charged. Spiritually, it becomes charged. That's the great message which Sri Ramakrishna, the teacher of Vivekananda, gave to his disciple. He said, at one stage, mind itself becomes a guru. Right now, mind is not a guru. Mind is a big problem for us. For a beginner who has not done a lot of spiritual sadhana, mind is a big problem. Mind is a big, great mischief maker. But once we make some progress in spiritual life, mind changes the way it functions. Mind slowly evolves, it grows, and it becomes a guide. If you make 10 steps, then mind will tell you how to make the 11th, 12th, 13th step. But without making the first step, without even starting the spiritual journey, if you sit somewhere and make a thorough philosophical analysis of spiritual life, you won't be anywhere. That's a big difference between spiritual life and any other activity. In all other activity, before even you start the process of the activity, we can make a thorough analysis of everything. When we prepare a machine, when we produce a car, we can make a thorough, absolutely complete, perfect plan analysis. From A to Z, we can do. But in spiritual life, once you start the first step A, then B becomes obvious to you. But you should start at least A. Before you start stage A, you cannot get a view, get an idea of how to take the next step, A, B, C, D, etc. That's a basic difference between spiritual life and all other activities. In spiritual life, slowly, when we practice spiritual practices, when we do spiritual practices sincerely, our mind also slowly becomes charged with spirituality. It grows and evolves and becomes more and more equipped, spiritually equipped to guide our further progress. That's the basic difference. So now we will have interaction maybe for 10 minutes. So, so we can raise some topics, discussions. So any subject for discussion? Yes. Now, egoism is the English translation of that klesha mentioned as mitha, it is called. It's the same as ahankara. Yes. Here, ahankara doesn't mean I consciousness, rather means our interpretation of what we are in terms of psychophysical entity. And that's because we are not aware of the spiritual dimension of our personality. We reduce ourselves into the psychophysical dimension of our true nature. Otherwise, these raga and dvesha, aversion, hatred won't take place. They take place at the physical and psychological level. So once we explain these problems in terms of what we really are, so you can explain this in the light of asmita or egoism, but then should not stop there. Egoism is rooted in avidya or ignorance, and then it is gone. Asmita is complete identification with the objects. We completely forget what we are, we identify ourselves with what we see, and we lose our own individuality. So, I am the one who sees this, I am the one who hears this, I am the one who is suffering, I am the one who is enjoying, all this. All again rooted in the idea of the idea that we are just this psychophysical entity.
Yes, it's natural for ahankara, for I.E. asmita, to create this problem. But once we realize this asmita is not of true nature, it is rooted in ignorance. And ignorance is something that we want to get rid of. Then that egoism no more plays a role. Oh, is it, well, the ahankara is not self-confidence. That's not what we meant here. Here, see, normally when you use the word English word ahankara, it means self-confidence or, well, I am the one. Not that. Here, it is more related to our interpretation of what we are. We interpret ourselves the physical body. When you interpret yourself as the physical body, when the psychological entity, then when you don't like a person, then that dislike becomes a very serious problem because you live at the psychological level, physical level. When you have a obsessive attachment, liking for something which you really don't want, in fact, you cannot get out of it because you are living at the psychological and physical level. The moment we link our psychological, psychophysical dimension to the spiritual dimension, then it's gone. And how do we do that? By realizing that all these are caused by ignorance or avidya. And once we understand it's all due to ignorance, then we get out of it. See, once when we realize that we are ignorant of something, then we are no more within its jurisdiction. When we realize a problem as a problem, then we are no more within the jurisdiction of the problem. Problem may be there, we also simultaneously try to get out of it. It's not so. When we realize there's a problem, and we realize a problem to be a problem because we want to get out of that problem. Otherwise, every problem is an opportunity for others. A spiritual seeker understands all these to be problems, not others. So once you realize this as a problem, then you're out of it. Is it not so? I did something because I was ignorant of it, then you won't deliberately try to do that again. So when you realize that your action, this is an example, when you realize that your action was because you were ignorant of certain things, then you won't deliberately repeat that action. You don't want to do something you know to be very well the result of ignorance. So when you become aware of ignorance, you are already becoming knowledgeable. You are moving towards knowledge. Unless you start your movement towards knowledge, you cannot become aware of ignorance. Is it not so? That's true. We have maybe one more question, otherwise we'll conclude. I finished by making this statement. Patanjali's whole plan is to make us aware of how our mind functions. Once we become aware of the way our mind functions, then mind cannot be anymore a big problem for us. Because knowledge is power and knowledge is freedom. That's an important point with Patanjali says. That's why the pratiprasava technique, which are already pratiprasava, is counter evolution. You have a problem and you want to understand the nature of the problem by getting an explanation how the problem originated. Once you understand how that problem originates, then it's no more a problem for you. Because your effort to get an explanation for that problem will take you to freedom from that problem. So one important advantage of reading Patanjali's system is, in our everyday life, people face many conflicts and problems. Once we read this, once we become aware of this, then we won't be affected by them. An obsession is no more an obsession if you read Patanjali's system. Because the moment you understand it's an obsession, then it's no more obsession for you. Obsession is something that catches you. You want to get out of it, but you don't know. Once you understand it's an obsession, then you won't go for it. You fall inside that. I shall explain this in the light of a famous explanation by Vyasa. In fact, Vyasa makes it a very important point here, you know. See, you know the definition of abhinivesha. Surasavahi vidushu abhitatharudhu abhinivesha. It means this klesha, this fear, this obsession is based on the ever-flowing momentum of samskaras and which is deep-rooted in the minds of even learned people. Is known to live for a long time. So it is, see, that's why it's vidushu api. Vidusha means those who are even learned, enlightened people. So this fear, this obsession is found even among learned people. But learned people here means intellectually enlightened people, not spiritually enlightened. So people who know theoretically, they don't get out of this problem. But the moment they start practicing, slowly they start getting out of this problem. So that's why the great commentator, they say, you know, a famous commentator is there. His name is Bhoja. Surasavahi Sarasaha means he says, it is not na samprajnatavan vidvan apitu sudha anuman viveki idi bhavaka. Statement, Vyasa statement. Na samprajnatavan vidvan apitu sudha anuman viveki idi bhavaka. What Vyasa says is very important. When Patanjali says that this abhinivesha is found even among learned people, vidushoha api, learned people, the learning is only intellectual learning. Intellectual learning doesn't help you to get out of this. You need to reach this at least minimum samprajnata samadhi. I mean, through spiritual practice, when you practice yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, when you, and finally samadhi, when you reach that level, or at least when you start the early steps, then slowly you get out of this abhinivesha. Not to theoretical knowledge. Theoretical knowledge cannot help you because you may get a conviction that it is wrong. But that is an intellectual cognition. Your mind may not agree to that point. Mind may be far below. So when there is a conflict between intellect and mind, very often people may be intellectually convinced of some great spiritual doctrines, but mind is not ready for it. For such people, they should try to bridge the gap between intellect and mind. And this is possible through constant reading, constant thinking, so that what you understand intellectually slowly comes down to the level of mind. Otherwise, mind will be always at a very low level, though intellect may be charged with great doctrines and ideas and concepts. So ideas and concepts at the intellectual level do not really help much unless they come down to the mental level, and it comes to mental level only through practice. For example, when we read a book, when you get a wonderful idea, if you just go on reading and thinking and writing books, maybe the way we do with different systems of philosophy, academic systems of philosophy, it may not help us much. But if you pray every day for 10 minutes, then you know what you read intellectually, it comes down to mental level. When you pray, that experience touches you more intimately. It is at the emotional level, mental level. It influences your attitudes, behaviors, and whole life. So the bridge between, the gap between mind and intellect can be bridged only through practice. Otherwise, one may be a great philosopher, still working for making his $2 billion, found into $3 billion, maybe it may work. Same obsession, same raga may continue. Because in intellectual conversion, money will not bring eternal peace. But with that, he should pray, he should think, he should contemplate, do introspection. Then the intellectual concept slowly comes down to the mental level. Then it becomes an attitude. When it becomes an attitude, then it really starts influencing our life. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. That's why in this sutra, vidushaha, the word means, here, vidusha means, even for the learned person, not intellectually learned person, but it doesn't happen. Those who are intellectually learned, it doesn't make much difference. You should be vidwan or learned in the true spiritual sense. And spiritual learning comes when you practice, not just study or debate or discuss. That's the idea. It's clear? Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Sat Sri Ram Krishna Namaste.